So today being the end of 2 days together, practicing. And actually, before I start, I'm curious at what is present in the room? What's happening for you? Just one word here and there. Just one word. Not too much. Just one word. Peace. Peace is present. What else is present? Silence is present. What else is present for you?
Anticipation.
Anticipation. Yeah, thank you. What else is present? Let's invite it all into the room. Everything is welcome.
Equanimity.
Equanimity is present. Ah, what else is present?
Gratitude
is present. What else is present?
Compassion
is present. What else is present for you?
Perseverance.
Beautiful.
Happiness.
Stillness.
Comfort.
Curiosity. This side of the room is kind of quiet. What else? What else is present? Anything. Bring it on. Everything is welcome in the space of equanimity. Everything is welcome. Nothing to either move towards or move away from. In the space of equanimity, everything is welcome. So bring it on. Any sadness present? Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, that's welcome too. It can be here. What else is present?
Frustration.
Thank you. Frustration can be here too. Irritability is present. Beautiful. Thank you. Irritability can be present here too. Standing in the middle of all this, Tatra Majatata, another word for equanimity, standing in the middle of all of this. What else is present? Bring it on. Ah, yeah, grief is too present. Yes, being with grief. Yeah, that too is present. What else? Anything else you like to name? To welcome into the space. Everything is welcome in the space of equanimity. Everything. Nothing left out. It's all welcome. Can be with, can stay. So as we've been exploring the theme of equanimity in the talks, and we continue to explore equanimity, what it is, how to cultivate it, what is it in different senses, in different ways that it relates to different ways it shows up experientially and in the practice, which I'll talk a lot more tonight about. But also I wanted to say before I get to that, I wanted to also give a nod to what we've been exploring so far in the mornings, in the morning instructions, which have been to arrive, to settle in the body, embodiment, mindfulness of the body, kayagatasati, mindfulness of the body, body, breath, stabilizing, arriving, mindfulness, sati, kaya, body, arriving. And it cannot be underemphasized, or actually cannot be overemphasized, I should say. It cannot be overemphasized how important coming back to the body, this feeling of embodiment, becoming embodied is with mindfulness for the practice of equanimity. It is tantamount. It is so important. In fact, mindfulness of the body is important, period, in this practice, in this path. No matter what you practice, start with mindfulness of the body. But especially, I would say, with equanimity, there is this sense of stability that we've talked about. And we'll keep repeating each other, by the way, Gil and I. There's so many different ways to say the same thing so that it lands in different ways. And there's this sense of stability with again, for example, this beautiful word, Tatra Majatata, that Gil brought up last night, standing in the middle of all this. There's a sense of standing, there's a sense of physicality. The image that brings up for me is this stability, standing for Gil, it's on a seesaw. For me, it's on a bedrock, stable, really stable. You're standing in the middle of it all. The wind can come, sure, let it come. Grief, oh yeah, you too. Sadness, oh yeah, standing in the middle of all of it. There's a sense of stability. So that image, that vision that works for me in my practice is an image of embodiment, really feeling in the body. If you're too head heavy, if you're in your thoughts all the time, if you're processing and thinking and evaluating, and it's really easy to be knocked over when a wind comes, when any wind comes, when the wind of thought, relational wind, one of the eight worldly winds that Gil beautifully talked about yesterday afternoon. Any of the winds come, you get knocked over. So having that stability, the body as a ballast, the body as stabilizing, as support, mindfulness of the body can be a huge support in cultivating this practice. And speaking of the body, also a lot of times this body, having a human body that is subject to illness, subject to pain, subject to aging. You have a body, you have experienced pain. If you haven't, well, of course you have. All of us have, right? And on this retreat, you've probably experienced different variations of pain, tightness here, a little ache there. Oh, I sat too long. Oh, leg has fallen asleep. Whatever manifestation of pain, or maybe chronic pain. It can be a great, wonderful sandbox for exploring equanimity physically, whether it's a condition that's temporary, maybe your leg has fallen asleep and it's uncomfortable, there's discomfort, or something that's chronic, that's just here, or something that tends to be, for you, brings up fear or worry. All of these areas in the body are excellent sandboxes for exploring equanimity. And many of you know that I have chronic Lyme disease, so I've had plenty of opportunity in my time, in my life, to explore equanimity with pain, with conditions that arise. Who knows if they will pass away or not, but there's plenty of opportunity, and it's been my biggest teacher. So whatever the condition of your body might be, with illness or with pain, it's a very basic, and simpler sometimes way to explore equanimity towards what might be unpleasant, what you may not want it to be there. But can I be with this? Can I be with this? Doesn't mean that I'm not going to care. I'm not going to. You know, after move my leg later if the pain gets too much. But can I be with this? Can there be a sense of ease? Experimenting, not moving towards, not hating, not having a conflictual relationship, and also not having thoughts of this is never going to go away. What am I going to do? The second arrows. So the physical pain becomes a perfect sandbox for exploring the emotional papancha, the emotional second arrows that we usually come up with respect to our bodies. So another thing I wanted to share is that cultivating equanimity, it's equanimity as an attitude, as a state of mind, as a relationship to others, relationship to ourselves, relationship to our thoughts, relationship to reality. There's so many different ways it can function. It is born of causes and conditions that we put in place. It's in some ways it's similar to concentration. When we practice samatha or concentration, unification of mind, we place conditions together. We can't make it happen, but we place the conditions together. We place conditions for making the supporting it to arise. And at first, by having more self-care, you know, it's have you noticed it's easier to be equanimous if you have eaten, if your blood sugar isn't low, if you've had enough sleep, if you're feeling well, if you're not cranky, all of that, it's easier to be equanimous. But if you haven't slept well, if you're hungry, your blood sugar is low, you're not feeling well, you maybe have a cold, etc., it's for an untrained mind. Those are more challenging conditions. So what we are doing here, we're creating the conditions. We are starting with the 2-pound weights and actually maybe we're visited by 100-pound gorilla. I don't know. But at some point in your life, you will be visited, if you haven't been, with a 100-pound gorilla. And to keep practicing for the moment, 100-pound gorilla shows up. To be ready. Is equanimity available? Oh, yeah, it is. I haven't slept. I haven't eaten. This is a really stressful situation. And can I have the presence? Can I have the equanimity? Can I have the presence of mind to allow wisdom to show up, to make the right decisions, to do the right thing instead of being reactive and completely bent out of shape? So as I mentioned the first evening about equanimity, there's so many different ways it shows up on the lists and the Buddhist lists and different senses. And one place that it prominently shows up and I would like to talk more about tonight is on the list of the Brahma Viharas, the heavenly abodes. Brahma Viharas, the heavenly abodes. So let me talk a little bit actually about the Brahma Viharas for those who may not be familiar with them, at least a definition, etc. So Brahma literally means the gods, means heavenly, Brahma. And Vihara is abode or dwelling. So Brahma Vihara is heavenly abodes. Abodes of Brahma, dwellings of the god, homes of the gods. It's also known, translated as the four immeasurables, these four qualities of the heart and mind. And the four are the order in which in Theravada, in this tradition, they're presented. The first one is metta, M-E-T-T-A, loving kindness, often translated as. The second one is karuna, compassion. The third one, mudita, vicarious joy. And the fourth one, of course, upekkha, equanimity. So one thing to say about the translation, the Brahma Vihara, is that the name of the four. In my practice for a long time, I thought, yeah, what a beautiful name, what an inspiring name, home of the gods, heavenly abodes. But I think I really got the name, why they are called heavenly abodes, some years ago. I both dedicated a year of my life to practicing metta and compassion in my daily life, and also I did a long retreat, residential retreat, and explored Brahma Vihara jhanas. And I think that has been the most heavenly month of my life that I spent on retreat. They don't say heaven on earth, but that could be another translation for Brahma Viharas, because practicing them, it's so beautiful. It's the qualities of the heart, the mind, so beautiful, so lovely, really. It felt like heaven on earth. If there isn't heaven on earth, it's practicing Brahma Viharas intensely for a while. As I'll speak more about all of these four, it's not just metta, which is loving kindness, which you think, oh yeah, loving kindness, love, yeah, that's lovely. But compassion, ooh, that has a lot of pain in it. Absolutely not. Actually, in practicing compassion, it's a beautiful state, because it meets, compassion is when metta meets suffering. So there's suffering, and metta, loving kindness, love meets it. And it's such a beautiful state in the heart of mind. Similarly with mudita, vicarious joy, when someone else has good fortune, is happy, you are happy for their happiness. You are just sharing, delighting in their happiness. It's a vicarious joy, delight, without any wanting, attaching to, wanting it for yourself. So it's a beautiful, beautiful state of mind. Imagine, actually, in this moment, think of someone that you care about, that you really love, and think of what you wish for them, and imagine them having that. How happy you would be for them. Your heart would be delighted. So that kind of delight. And of course, equanimity, which we often think of as cool. It occurred to me on that retreat that the reason why, I had always wondered, but never dared to ask, why equanimity was stuck with the Brahma Viharas. You know, the other three seem kind of lovey-dovey, right? Metta, oh, loving kindness, compassion, oh, mudita, oh, I'm happy for you. Equanimity, why was it just kind of like stuck in with the other three? What was the point? Like, it didn't quite make sense to me, but fine, I'll practice it. You tell me, I'll do it. And the feeling that really arises with equanimity is not what I had imagined it to be, which is this kind of, you're kind of in your shell, oh, you know, things come and go. But it's actually, it's a caring, there is warmth to equanimity. Because if you didn't care, if there was no care, there would be no presence. So think about when. So I'll go to an example. I'll come back to this. You know, when people are in hospice and they're dying, the best we can offer them, and the teachings are, and I've gone through it myself, the best you can do is to offer your full presence. You're just there with equanimity. You're offering your heart, your presence. And that sense of presence, full presence, you're not falling into it with grief. You're not like, oh, you're not turning away. You're there offering your loving presence, your full presence, with equanimity. There's nothing to be done, accepting what needs to happen. There's a sense of equanimity. So, if equanimity is which, so equanimity has that sense of warmth, caring presence. If it didn't, it would turn itself away. There would not be presence available. The fact that you're present there by the bedside is a sign of care, warmth, affection. So with equanimity, as I was practicing in this residential retreat, in this month long, there was a sense of being with everything that was arising, and a sense of being with everything that was arising, passing, not falling into, not moving away, but with a sense of care. There was this sense of care and love, which is why I stayed. I kept doing this practice with everything that arose. You see that, you get the nuance? It's not aloof. Aloofness is, oh, I don't care. I'm just going to la 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 la. It's not that. Equanimity cares, stays. I care so much that I'm going to stay here and be present and let wisdom arise. Another way in which, another reason why equanimity is both a heart practice, a Brahma-vihara practice is a heart practice. It's also a wisdom practice. So equanimity, being stuck in the Brahma-viharas, is where wisdom and compassionate practices really link. They come together. It's a wisdom practice, equanimity. Okay, what does that mean, that it's a wisdom practice? So one aspect of equanimity is, as we've talked, the word upekkha itself has the sense of a bird's eye view, looking at a distance. In fact, the word, the to see, to oversee, to overview, bird's eye perspective, that's not caught. So what's part of that bird's eye view, that part of seeing clearly, but having a larger perspective, is actually what comes in the teachings of karma. So, and karma is a wisdom teaching. Okay, so now I have something else to explain. Karma. So the teaching of karma, and I'm going to ask you to please put away the way it's kind of bandied about in the popular culture, because I don't think it really serves the way the word is used in popular culture as a deep liberating teaching, as an empowering teaching, instead of like, oh, what have I done in my past life? Like, oh, I'm just self-flagellating. That's not a very helpful at all, a helpful way to see that teaching. But really the teaching of karma, another way to see it is seeing the causes and conditions. So causes and conditions, conditionality, which also relates to dependent origination. So there are causes and conditions for things to arise. So for now, let's put away the multi-life model, you know, the past lives, future lives. Let's put that away for a moment. But just, there's so many different causes for a particular condition to arise. So many different causes. So fact that, for example, you are here right now, there have been, so if you think about all the causes and conditions in your life that have led you to this moment, your mind will explode. And in fact, contemplating dependent origination and causality, causes and conditions, the Buddha said, it's one of the imponderables. Your head will explore, explode. Please don't do it. The soup that Gil mentioned will be easier to care to clean up. He was mentioning dropping the soup in the middle of the dining hall. So the point being, if you really consider all the conditions, all the causes and conditions, everything that really supports something coming to being, including your own volition. So the karma is the part of the volition that actually is part of your volition, part of this, but that is not independent of all the other causes and conditions. So in a way, when we go up a few thousand feet, let's say a few miles, and we have a bird's eye view, get to see all the causes and conditions, your volition included, your own karma, your own intentionality included, as well as all the other causes and conditions, past, present, in the space of time, geography, so much. So it gives us a bird's eye view of seeing that it's not, you see your part. If you had clear vision, if you had Buddha's vision, you would see that, oh yes, that's the thread of my intentionality. And then there are all these other, or say if you're concerned about someone that you really, really care about and you feel that, oh, it's my responsibility that they're feeling this way. You see their thread and you see your thread, and there's all the other causes and conditions that are completely out of your control, have nothing to do with control. Having done the best you could, you've done the best you could have, and there's so many causes and conditions. So claiming responsibility for things that you cannot possibly be responsible for at that point seems like madness. So that's when the wisdom view, the wisdom practice comes in. It's a sense of, it's a bigger picture that's often not available to us in our normal human minds of seeing all the causes and conditions, not possible. But we can imagine, conceive of this expanded view, this wisdom-filled view. You're with me? You're following? Okay. So, couple of things. So I've shared a couple of ways to relate to equanimity. One is the bird's eye view, seeing the vastness, causes and conditions. And the other is the sense of this bedrock, the sense of stability that is offered physically, and also imagining that you are sitting on a bedrock when you're practicing. And I want to offer a few of the sentences that are offered. So the similar to the other Brahmaviharas, in this context, equanimity can be practiced as a practice when you sit similar to metta, when you're repeating some phrases, may I be safe, may I be happy, may I be well, may you be safe, happy, well, similar to compassion, may you be free from your suffering, may your suffering be eased. Similar to mudita, vicarious joy, when you sit and repeat the phrases with specific people in mind. May your happiness continue. May it never cease. May it never end. I'm happy for your happiness. I take delight in your joy. Similarly, the practice of equanimity with respect to Brahma Viharas is practiced in this way by saying some phrases, particular phrases, as one sits, the way the practice develops. One starts with a neutral person. You bring up someone for whom you don't know them very well. Maybe someone you've seen at a coffee shop, you know, the barista maybe, a neighbor. You bring a neutral person to mind. You can say one of these equanimity phrases for them in practicing. And then after the neutral person, then you move to yourself, you do the practice for yourself, and then you move to the rest of the categories that are in the practice of the Brahma Viharas. Then you move to your benefactor, someone who's been a teacher or supportive for you. Move to your dear friend. Then move to someone you have challenge with. And in that case, you need to be careful not to fall into, oh yeah, things are as they, oh yeah, yeah. So kind of like it doesn't become like pushing them away, and then all beings everywhere. So I'd like to offer a few of these phrases that when someone is doing the Brahma Vihara practice of equanimity, one will choose one of these phrases and will repeat them over and over again. So you get a sense of them, what they are like. So the first one is a traditional one that works for some people great, and for some people it does not work at all. You get to pick and choose. So, and I might post these later so you don't have to write them down. So the first one is a traditional, which is all beings are owners of their action, heirs to their action. Their happiness and unhappiness depends on their actions, not my wishes for them. And the word here, actions, is a translation of karma here. Cause and the results of one's action. Another one is all beings have their own journey according to their own karma. All beings have their own journey according to their karma. Another flavor of how this can be practiced, whether I understand it or not, things are unfolding according to a lawful nature. I like this one because this again taps into this wisdom teaching. Whether I understand it or not, things are unfolding according to a lawful nature. Whether or not I understand it, so admitting that the wisdom that may not be accessible right now. Another one is all beings meet their joys and sorrows according to a lawful nature. Another one much simpler. Things are just as they are right now. Things are just as they are right now. So imagine sitting and practicing that. Things are just as they are right now. No matter how I might wish things to be otherwise, things are as they are. I like this one too. No matter how, I like them all. No matter how I might wish things to be otherwise, things are as they are. You can let these wash over you, and you choose one that you like that you might save and maybe work with if it's helpful for you during this retreat or not. Another one is, I care for you, but I can't control your happiness and unhappiness. I care for you, but I can't control your happiness and unhappiness. Next one has to do with my life. May I accept the conditions of my life with ease. May I accept the conditions of my life with ease. May I accept the arising and passing of all things with equanimity and balance. Next one, may I, or may you, or may we be undisturbed by the comings and goings of events. May we be undisturbed by the comings and goings of events. I care for you, but cannot keep you from suffering. That's an important one. I care for you, but cannot keep you from suffering. I wish you happiness, but cannot make your choices for you. I wish you happiness, but cannot make your choices for you. I care about you, but I'm not in control of the unfolding of events. I can't make it better for you. May we accept things as they are. May I accept this just as it is. Things are the way they are. Or simply, it is what it is. This was my favorite for a long time. It is what it is. It is what it is right now. It is what it is. It is what it is. So one thing I want to emphasize again, the practice of equanimity is not a practice of aloofness. In fact, indifference, apathy, aloofness is considered to be the near enemy. So in these teachings, there is the idea of near enemy, which is something that seems similar to the real thing, masquerades as it, but it's not the real thing. But you can fall into it and think that, oh yeah, you're practicing the real thing, but no. It's the quote-unquote near enemy. So the near enemy of equanimity is aloofness, apathy, indifference, which is very different from the sense of care, because you still care. There's a sense of presence, but it means you're accepting the conditions just as they are. It doesn't mean that you may not do anything to alleviate, support, etc., but it comes from a place of wisdom and non-reactivity. I cannot emphasize that enough. So when practicing equanimity, especially relationally, because at first actually the Brahmaviharas are a relational practice that have other dimensions, which I'll talk about in a moment. But first, their relational practice. You start with somebody else in mind or yourself in mind. You're doing this practice relationally. So offering presence, accepting that this is what's happening right now. May I accept the reality of this is what's happening right now. Things are as they are. May I accept that things are as they are. Not what if, not that, like things are as they are. May I accept things just as they are? No different. I wish I had done that. You shouldn't have done that. And this, like, okay, it's not supportive. It's not helpful. Things are as they are. May I accept? It is what it is right now. When the mind isn't churning, there can be a lot more wisdom available. So when the mind is accepting, it is what it is. You're not pushing it away. You're not pushing it away and you're not clinging. You're not making it so. There's a sense of ease, equanimity, things as they are. And there is space for wise action, not reactivity pushing it away and pulling it forward, but in terms of a wise action. And that also applies to our activity and our engagement in social justice. So equanimity doesn't mean that, oh yeah, may I accept things as they are? Oh yeah. It doesn't mean that. It means accepting the conditions. This is the way things are. Okay. Ease, wisdom. Okay. What can be the wise action? Appropriate response coming from a space of equanimity, non-reactivity. I know I keep repeating this. This is so important because this is such a point of confusion usually for people. with practicing equanimity or understanding the teachings on equanimity. But it makes you less reactive about others, yourself, etc. It's a lack of reactivity. That's not helpful. So equanimity is supporting us not to fall into and not to lean back, to be with without reactivity. And that's a sign of strength. The strength actually supports the stability, supports us to have equanimity. And equanimity gives us more stability and strength where we're not falling over, where we're not being knocked over. And mindfulness, as I mentioned earlier, mindfulness supports equanimity, specifically mindfulness of the body and mindfulness in general. So I want to say a couple of words since we're on the topic of Brahma Viharas. How in equanimity supports the other three practices that I mentioned, metta, karuna, and mudita. So metta being sense of goodwill and kindness. So without equanimity, without this, the sense of stability, a bedrock, imagine you're sitting on a bedrock. If you imagine Kuan Yin, the perfection of compassion, sitting on this bedrock of stability, practicing, listening to the 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows of the world, it was just a sense of equanimity. So if metta didn't have equanimity, then it would become attachment. You know, if there is no ease, oh, I love you so that you would do this for me, it becomes conditional love. It becomes love with attachment, with strings attached, wanting, or maybe wanting good things to happen because you are wishing metta for someone, you know, calling them at the end of the retreat. If you were sitting in metta, doing a metta retreat, are you okay yet? Are you happy yet? I've been wishing you happiness this whole month, this whole week. So lack of attachment to outcome. Just offering, no strings attached, or doing the practice so that, as I mentioned, somebody would do something for you, or they would love you back, or some kind of conditional. Instead, just offering it up. So with equanimity empowers metta to be just this unconditional offering of the heart of kindness, without expecting anything in return, which is such a beautiful, wholesome quality to have as a human being. Similarly, compassion, for completion, the far enemy of metta is hatred, anger, ill will. But that's kind of clear. The far enemy is the exact opposite, of course. If there was no equanimity, metta could veer into that if you're doing practice. But really, I think the near enemies are more difficult to distinguish sometimes. With compassion, karuna, the near enemy is a couple of things. One is sympathetic distress or empathetic distress. With compassion, that's when you're meeting the suffering, there's somebody suffering, you're wishing them well, and you're holding the suffering with love, with metta. So compassion again, compassion is when suffering is held with, it's met with loving kindness, it becomes compassion, the two. The merging of the two becomes compassion practice. If there was no stability of equanimity, one could fall into the pain. Oh, this is so hard, this is so terrible. So empathetic distress is when we tip over and we're bobbing up and down in the waves of sadness of with the other person, and we're not on the stability of equanimity to offer them compassion. We're in there like, oh, this is terrible. We're beating our chest with them in it. And somebody now has to come rescue both of us. Does that make sense? So if there's no equanimity allows that spaciousness, that bedrock of support to be there, to extend ourselves, extend our hearts to others when they are in distress, instead of us now getting overwhelmed. And, you know, 911 has to be called for both of us, which is not really supportive for anybody in any environment. So equanimity allows that to happen. Similarly, with mudita, sympathetic joy, joy at the good fortune of others, the near enemy can be over-exuberance. And you get high as a kite on happiness of others. Again, if there's no equanimity, if there's no stability, can get a little too bubbly, can get into your head, can also lead to sense of pride. Oh, like my child or my team. It kind of loses its balance, loses its lack of attachment. It becomes kind of attachy to the other person's happiness. It's not clean anymore. It gets kind of clingy. So as I mentioned already, for upekkha itself, for equanimity itself, the near enemy is indifference and aloofness, coolness. And the far enemy, just to be complete, there are two far enemies for it. One is, and that makes sense, because if the idea of equanimity is the sense of balance, stability, not falling into and not pushing away, so the near enemy, the far enemy would be if you're actually attaching to something, you're falling, you want it to be a particular way, or you're pushing it away, there's aversion, don't like it. So either resentment, not wanting, or greed or attachment, wanting it to be a particular way, those are the far enemies, which are the opposite of equanimity. Easy to recognize. So equanimity as one of the Brahma Viharas, you know, the practice of Brahma Viharas, they seem like relational practices. But I think there are a lot more than that. We will be missing the point of and the depth and the beauty and the grace of Brahma Vihara practice if we just thought they were relational practices and wishing other people well or us well. So that is beautiful. Yes, they are relational practices, and they are a lot more than that. So in a way, the same way that in that Brahma Viharas, for example, let's say metta, which is loving kindness and is taught very often, when we practice it relationally for another person, for ourselves, not only there is a cultivation of a stance of friendliness towards others, hence relational practice, but it gives rise to a stance of kindness, an attitude, a change in attitude, a change in stance, the way we are in the world, the way we are towards ourselves, the way we are towards others. So it goes from relational to attitudinal, a stance that you have as a human being, a stance towards others and towards reality, towards everything, towards all experience. You see how that's an expansion of relational? It starts with relational, but it becomes this sense of permeating, it's a sense of beaming, radiating, this attitude towards reality of metta, of kindness. And there is yet another aspect of it. And this one is harder to verbalize, so I'm going to do my best. So from that aspect of stance, attitudinal, it becomes, it opens up to another dimension. It opens up to the dimension of humanity, the way we see our place in the world. And that's where the wisdom really opens up. And without making any metaphysical statements, is a sense of, it opens up to other dimensions of mystery, beauty, grace. So something that started as relational and it became attitudinal or stance, it opens up to this dimension of beauty, grace, love that's above and beyond the everyday experience. Just opens us up. So similarly with equanimity, the same way. Practicing equanimity in this way that I've talked about, in the respect of the Brahma Viharas with the phrases, etc. It can start as relational. May I accept things as they are, or in the more traditional one, I care for you, but I cannot control your happiness and unhappiness, you know, kind of relational, your relation. May I accept the comings and goings in my life, etc. So it's relational. And then it becomes attitudinal, a stance towards experience. Like, oh yeah, ease, acceptance, ease with things as they arise and as they pass. And then it can grow as the third stage to this other aspect of mystery, of sense of ease and equanimity for our humanity, our comings and goings in this world, and everything that seemingly happens to us and to us and our planet, etc. And again, not in a way of not caring, loving, but it allows another way of seeing, being, that can become available. And along these lines of these different steps, the relational, you know, the relational is where we start with the Brahma Viharas. The relational is where we start with the Brahma Viharas. And it's a wonderful place to be. It's rich because we live together. We live in the world. We live with ourselves, if with no one else. We have a relationship to ourselves. And sometimes, and also I think another way that it comes up is examining and asking ourselves, how loyal are we to our suffering? Sometimes we are so loyal to our suffering. We are so loyal to it. So equanimity, both as a wisdom practice and part of this warmth of the Brahma Viharas, really being with, not to ignore emotions, but to create the space to decide what is the wise way to react, both to ourselves and to others, to the point of becoming unoffendable, having so much strength, stability, becoming unoffendable. It just comes and goes through. There's nowhere for it to stick. a sense of equanimity, balance. And it all starts, I think it all starts with coming back to this moment with mindfulness, coming back to this moment with mindfulness, touching in, feeling the body, sensing from within. I like to end with this cartoon, which I can't quite show you, but I'll describe it to you. The cartoon shows there are two dogs. They're talking dogs. They're sitting on zabutons. They're both sitting on zabutons each, and they have their collars off right in front of them. And one of them is sitting in a meditation pose. They're cross-legged, sitting in a meditation pose. And one of them is turning to the other one and saying, "The key to meditation is learning to stay." So may we all learn to stay. Thank you.